Hi, friends. Welcome to Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Today, we are joined by a distinguished author and Dr. Joe Abraham. He's recently written King's Conqueror's Psychopaths, From Alexander to Hitler to the Corporation. We are going to talk about that, but first, let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Abraham, or Joe. Can I call you Joe?
Absolutely.
Born in Evanston, Illinois, Cook County. Came down to Sulphur, Louisiana to go to high school. Went to college at LSU, went into the Navy, came back to college, majored in pre-med, switched to zoology, then went to med school at Tulane, practiced as an emergency physician for a long time. Also was in a PhD program in that period for a while, then had the Acadiana Educational Endowment Fund, continued to work as a doctor, and like me, he is a late married person. He now has two children. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pearson.
So you've written this very interestingly titled book called King's Conqueror's Psychopaths. How did you get interested in this topic, and what is it that binds together the different threads of research in your book?
There are a lot of things, and what was interesting to me is looking back at how often the people here in Acadiana, the Cajuns, Creoles, but also many of the faculty at UL were highly influential, dropped clues, breadcrumbs along the way. I was an insomniac at 7, and that was during the Johnson-Goldwater presidential campaign. And I remember two men talking about it, and they were both sure, very politely they were discussing it, but they were both sure that their candidate was the right man. And lying at bed at night, I started thinking about it, which one was right. And I gradually realized you couldn't know who was right, and yet they were both sure they were right. And so then I started on the question, I think that's kind of been a lifelong quest, why are we crazy? And we are. And this book is the first in a series, not a linear series, more of a sort of a web of books that explores that situational insanity from different directions.
Wow, that's something. First of all, there aren't that many 7-year-old insomniacs. And then, why are we crazy? Explain to me, what do you mean? Now, most people don't think they're crazy. Most people think, if you ask them, well, yes, I'm a very rational person, even if they're not. You know, even people who are identifiably crazy, they're institutionalized, will tell you that they're not oftentimes. So why are we crazy?
Well, it is a situational insanity. A lot of the times we function very logically. That became part of the question. Why is it we have this capacity for logic, but then ignore it? I give you religion. I give you politics. I give you football. Mm-hmm. Here we are.
Now, wait a minute. That's a sore subject.
Yeah, that is. That one's really contentious. But we can look at the other religion, the other political side, and see how crazy they are. See how illogical they are. And it never occurs to us we are equally so. What's interesting, and I will explore more in future books, is how this extends to science. Scientists are exactly the same way. They convince themselves that they are very rational and logical in their investigation. But it's been an important source of some 20th century philosophy. But Thomas Kuhn and Karl Popper, mm-hmm. look at this and realize, no, we aren't. As scientists are not as committed to truth as they think they are.
So what you're saying is we're all kind of judged, or we're all kind of predisposed to our own kind of prejudices, and the way we take things is not as quite straightforward as we think, because we've made assumptions that cut away at the foundation of our rationality. So we're situationally rational. In other words, we're not rational, and we're not capable of seeing things from other people's point of view. Is that correct?
That is correct, and that's exactly it. Kuhn gives us the word, or certainly popularizes the word, paradigm. But we see the world through a framework. And if we ask someone to step outside of the framework, they struggle. And I'd add at this point, the one true American philosophy, I believe, is not really a philosophy. It's pragmatism, which is and actually it comes to us from Edmund Burke, the Anglo-Irish statesman. But that, you know, your concepts, your paradigms are tools. Sometimes you want to be liberal. Sometimes you want to be conservative. Sometimes you want to do this. Sometimes you want to do that. I always think when I'm talking to Christians about it is the parable of the ox in the ditch. Religion says you leave him there, and common sense says no.
Interesting. Pragmatism. Boy, we're really covering some interesting bases here.
Going back to undergrad.
I see that. Now, you make kind of a connection in your book between personality and politics. So do certain personality types, are they products of certain regimes? I know Plato, and I don't want to take you back too far, but Plato used to argue, or Aristotle argued, that the regime or the polis would shape the person. So is your book partly based on that kind of an insight?
That's a really good question, and I'm going to answer it very tentatively because it's such a good question. I haven't thought that one all the way through. Two things happen. One is that the narcissist is really the one driven to power. And currently, the current president has certainly come under a lot of criticism. He nicely fits the diagnostic criteria for narcissism, but I think his supporters are right. He is simply the unvarnished politician. The other narcissists are covered up. They're smart enough, shrewd enough, experienced enough to cover it up. And what's fascinating is the one recent president who perhaps was not a narcissist was also not very successful, and that would be Jimmy Carter. He really did not – I suspect. I'm not an authority on the man. I suspect he really did not understand the game. So narcissists are driven to power, positions of centrality where they can get lots of attention and lots of praise. But the other question you ask is much more interesting, that the polis or the organization shapes the individual. And it does, but he may not change it permanently. Let me explain. The general may be a perfectly fine gentleman, you know, but in warfare, he becomes one of the sickest bastards in history. He sends people out to slaughter each other, and horrible things happen as a consequence. Likewise, the head of the CEO might be a very nice person, but when he gets behind his desk, he is required. He has a fiduciary requirement to run a ruthless juggernaut that just steamrolls over people and frequently trades their lives for profits. And this is going on in the world all around us. We read the stories, but much like Life Under the King, we rationalize it away. We think the king is our hero. He's a good guy. And so we think our CEOs are heroes. And we don't see what is right in front of our eyes, that these are not nice people, or at least they aren't while they're in those positions.
Clarify something for me now. It's clear that we've been talking a little bit about leaders, right? So we're talking about – and you're the person who suggested kind of a narcissistic look at leaders. So the theory would be all presidents are crazy because you'd have to be crazy to run for president, right? So there's a sense that there's a certain narcissism there. So that, whether you hide it or not, and your argument, of course, would be that Trump is perhaps less successful at hiding his narcissism that's clearly else, you know, in other leaders. But what about the people? Are there certain kinds of people who are attracted to certain kinds of leaders?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's fascinating experiments starting in 1960 with Stanley Milgram, where he investigates what we come to know today as the authoritarian personality. This goes back to Theodor Adorno and the Frankfurt School, who looked at the Nazis and the fascists and tried to understand them, but what they really gave us was some characteristics. And let me jump. One of the things I make in the comments that are points that I make in the book is that kings and conquerors were not the people we thought in our fairy tales. They were the most horrific serial killers who preyed upon entire nations in history. So why do we think otherwise? And the answer is fairly simple. For 10,000 years, if you said otherwise, you died. Not just said otherwise. If you thought otherwise, you were likely to slip. And so for 10,000 years, we've been under this huge cultural and selective pressure to believe what we are told. And this produces the authoritarian personality, again, which can be a kind of temporary insanity. You can find – this is what like I said, Stanley Milgram, but also Philip Zimbardo at Stanford and some others could show. You can take perfectly decent, very nice, respectable people, put them in certain situations, and they suddenly become – mindless automatons, almost. They do what they are told to do.
Well, of course, this has been the argument about the Nazi regime and the atrocities committed under Hitler, was that the German citizens participated. And in fact, you know, that's one of the things that I think was it Hannah Arendt said, the banality of evil. You know, there's a real sense that you don't have to be particularly evil to do evil things. You just have to be a bureaucrat who wants to follow orders.
Yeah, and that's spot on, and you said it perfectly. Okay, we come out of this tradition that Hitler was this horror, this one instance in history, and we keep telling ourselves that he was unique. And one of the things, and I've gotten some pushback on the book, is that I point out Hitler certainly was unique in some of the specifics. But in the desire for slaughter and domination and the willingness to sacrifice and torture and subjugate people, he was very, very common. That is the thread that runs through history. Take any history – and I spend a fourth of the book looking at conquerors. But take any king or conqueror through history. Do an internet search with the words atrocity, torture, whatever, and you'll start getting hits. Stuff starts coming up out of every one of them. And if you ever found a king who didn't do that, then he wasn't king very long.
Interesting. Now, what you're saying is a couple of things that I want to explore. One of them is that we tend to think that Hitler is sui generis, meaning Hitler is unique. There was nobody like Hitler. He was the worst. He was the most terrible thing that ever walked on the face of the earth. But in fact, you're saying that's not true.
No.
That Hitler actually has a lot in common with other leaders and conquerors, and they are all to some extent doing it. We just are more familiar with Hitler, or his brand of genocide was particularly modern in some sense, or awful in a particular way, but maybe not different in kind. Maybe not different in type than some of the others.
Hitler, that is certainly the way we have looked at it. And there is the dark tetrad, I'll mention very quickly: narcissism, psychopathy, Machiavellianism, and sadism. And to that I add a fifth, the dark pentad, which is fanaticism.
Tell us those again. Narcissism?
Narcissism, psychopathy, Machiavellianism, which means something very different in psychology than in the social sciences.
I think people know what narcissism is. What's psychopathy?
It depends on who you ask and where you look. After reading and really researching this for several years, as I see it, the psychopath is someone who has blunted feelings. He is disinterested in other people and their suffering, but he is often disinterested in his own suffering. It's this real odd character. The concept has been skewed because of the very important work – I don't want to knock the work – of his name will come to me in a second – a guy who applied these ideas to criminals. And the criminal psychopath is a different thing. He has a lot of narcissism.
Right. We're talking today with Dr. Joe Abraham. He's the author of Kings, Conquerors, Psychopaths, From Alexander to Hitler to the Corporation. We're diving in deep, and we're going to pick up those threads when we return right after these messages.
I'm Lisa Mullins. PRI's The World brings you more than just the day's news.
In Cameroon, we have 260 languages.
We introduce you to people around the globe.
For a country like Iran, where you cannot really mingle with people outside your house.
This is giving hope to Turkish people.
There's one Chinese saying, everyone wants to be a rich guy, right?
Join us and hear the world.
Monday through Thursday afternoon at 2, here on KRVS. I love short fiction. Short fiction is like close-up magic. This is Neil Gaiman. Get your story fixed this week on Selected Shorts from PRI, Public Radio International.
6 p.m. Friday on KRBS.
Hello and welcome back to Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host. We are talking today with Dr. Joe Abraham, author of Kings, Conquerors, Psychopaths, From Alexander to Hitler to the Corporation. And we have a wide-ranging discussion. As we left, we were talking about whether or not Hitler was, in fact, unique. You went on, if I can say, Dr. Abraham, to talk about narcissism, Machiavellianism, fanaticism, psychopathy, and sadism as being kind of, I would say, the unholy penta.
We call it the dark tetrad.
Dark tetrad.
And then I add to it fanaticism as the pentad, and this is what
– pentad, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. And the dark.
So this is really what you're really doing is kind of a psychological look at psychiatric look at leaders and relationships with people and the kind of the acts they do. Is that
certainly part of it.
Part of it.
Is part of it. But then I take that this dysfunction, this codependency we have, as we mentioned before the break, the authoritarian personality who blindly marches often off to his own demise. Behind some strong man.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, you know. So you have the strong man who we say is at the minimum narcissistic and probably some of these other things, fanatical. And then you have just normal people who are kind of like sheep, but they end up being the instruments of this person or this regime's kind of terror. Do they bear any responsibility for what happens?
All right. I mean, they have to. I have some thoughts about that. I'm not sure we want to go off into the woods.
Okay, sure.
But they do. But it's very interesting. One of the people who lived here, you may have known him, Hugh Thompson, the hero of My Lai, the guy who stopped the My Lai massacre.
Right.
And the question I ask in the book is, why is it that with all these West Pointers and college graduates and all these people up and down the line, the only person who could look in and say, this is immoral, was a high school I think he might have been a dropout, but he was a licensed funeral director. He had no advanced education.
Mm-hmm.
Why was he the person? And I have some thoughts and some ideas about that.
Now, you said you've gotten some pushback from people about the thesis of your book. Mm-hmm. Would you like to – this is your opportunity. You want to take on some of those people?
Sure. Again, we've live under this idea that Hitler was an aberration and that our kings and queens were wonderful people. And they were basically all Hitler. What's interesting is two of the scholars who helped me with this.
They were all Hitler. That's your
expression. Yeah, they were all Hitler, maybe without the fanaticism. They were more into just the plain narcissism. The anti-Semitism was certainly unusual. It bears other names. Pol Pot would have people killed for wearing glasses because they looked intellectuals. He was anti-intellectual. Stalin would have people killed because he thought they weren't thinking the right things. He wanted mental purity. And so it goes. Of the two scholars who worked with me, it's very interesting. One of them read my thesis and said, oh, really, Joe, do you want to compare Napoleon to Hitler? And the other scholar said, oh, this is old hat.
Interesting.
She comes from France, and she said, I learned about this in elementary school. They compared Napoleon to Hitler.
So what is the difference between Napoleon and Hitler if we were to talk about that? I mean, obviously, they live a couple hundred years apart, or 150 years apart. But.
Again, I think the racism and Hitler's racism brought him down. Don't forget that World War II is brought to an end by the three men, Albert Einstein, Leo Szilard, and Robert Oppenheimer, all of them Jewish.
Hmm.
And these were people he thought were the inferior underclass, and he slaughtered some of his best minds and destroyed them.
Crazy. Let's move on a little bit and talk about so what are the connections to the corporation? I know that's one of the things about your book. You cover a lot of ground. It's a historical look. It's a psychological look. But you also make some very interesting connections to the present day you know, I'm thinking about consolidation and corporations and the media. And so what do you draw from your book, and how does that give you an insight into your research, I should say, and how does that give you an insight into what's happening today with our society, with capitalism, or kind of our post-capitalism future?
The founders protected us from monarchy, but they had no concept of monopoly. Currently in the United States today, 90% of all media, that's books, magazines, newspapers, radio, internet, and whatever else I'm leaving out there, 90% of it in the United States is controlled by six corporations. Those six corporations are controlled by 15 billionaires. And if I remember correctly, most of them are not even American. At the same time, I look at corporate skullduggery. Corporations constantly trade our lives and our security for profits. I found a website that looks at Department of Defense contractors. One of them sold, I think, to the Russians, the software for the inertial guidance system to Air Force One. But the poster child for this has to be Standard Oil during World War II in the Truman hearings. They found out that Standard Oil had a formula for synthetic rubber that they were selling to the Nazis and withholding from the Americans. There were a lot of corporations making money on both sides, but Standard Oil was literally selling out our way of life. And nothing came of it. None of these corporations were punished. And in fact, it goes on today. Arms dealers are selling us out on both sides. They're willing to trade our life, our system of life, for their greed, their narcissism. And it goes on. But it goes on the lesser corporations. They feed us filthy food, very unhealthy stuff, and undermine everything about us as the rest of us struggle to build a better world.
Now, is that just kind of a personal myopia? So you think corporations have risen. They've taken, in some cases, the place of the state, or they have the kind of power that in the past only states used to have. But corporations have even perhaps less interest in protecting the interests of their citizens. In fact, some people have said, you know, when you get to the stage of corporations that we're at, if, you know, Davos, those people answer to no government. You know, they answer to the bottom line, maybe shareholders, maybe their owners, so that there's complete lack of responsibility. Is that a danger in terms of narcissism, in terms of the self-seeking behavior?
Boy, that was a softball. If you remember, there was a point at which the United States Department of Justice did not have the resources to prosecute Microsoft. They could not match resources with Microsoft. They do, and again, it doesn't matter whether the CEO is personally a malignant narcissist. When he sits behind his desk, everything is in terms of the bottom line. And it really doesn't even matter if what he is contemplating is illegal. It's only what is the cost benefit.
Okay, well, let's stop just a second. So let's talk about is that or true? What about corporate responsibility? What about the things that we hear about corporations are trying to work for a better environment or work to protect people or being responsible corporate citizens? I mean, is that all just window dressing?
I think they do some things, but I think even when they do humanitarian things, it's calculated to increase their bottom line. And that's certainly what they tell us, and that's who they tell us they are. But look at any corporation and how many scandals appear constantly. You get to be really big by watching every penny, squeezing every penny, and they're nowhere. Imagine you're sitting in a corporate boardroom and you were to say, you know, I think we should make less money here and take care of our customers. You'd be laughed out of the boardroom. That is not even a consideration.
You know, one of the things that's interesting about Donald Trump is that he's kind of personalized American government in a way. You know, my generals, my Air Force, my Army, you know, there's been a real sense that he's kind of viewed the United States as the company that he is in charge. And so when he says America first, or we're going to go after American interests, you really get that sense that he's kind of thrown aside the mantle of oh, America, who's acting for the public good. And he said, no, we're not going to do that. We are going to work for the American people's good, and we're going to get rid of this pretense that we're looking out for people all over the globe. I mean, is he just being more honest about what's already happening, or is this really a departure?
Ooh, boy, that's a really good question. Okay, so first of all, this is what Donald Trump says, and this is what he does, and that there is not really good agreement between those two sometimes. I think he sees himself as just peachy keen. What he does is something else, and it seems clear from where we're sitting, we're not on the inside, that it's whoever talked to him last. It's whoever motivated him last. You know, he wants to say the good things, but then he makes the choices that belie those. I don't know if that answered your question, but we could spend several discussions on Donald Trump.
Yeah, we of course could, and I don't want to make this about Donald Trump. I was just curious. It seems like he's more straightforwardly kind of acting self-interested in terms of American interests in the world. At least he's not giving lip service to the United Nations. Oh, it's going to be better for mankind. He's kind of saying, no, it's going to be better for the United States. And is that a kind of an honesty that because of his perhaps unsophisticated nature that he brings to this?
Yeah, but he also speaks very highly of Putin and Kim Jong-un and at times Duterte and Erdogan and these other guys. He's kind of all over the board, and what he says one day is not what he says necessarily the next day, and neither one of those may be what he does.
Okay. Now, you've done this study, you've produced this book, you've done all this research. I know it was a number of years that you've thought about this and kind of brought it together. It brings together your interest in politics and in medicine and human kind of thinking and psychology. What's next? Where do you go with this? You referred to a web of books. So which should we be looking for?
Yeah, next one up is one that it occurs to me that we can take the theory of evolution and apply it to non-biological systems. And so that will be the next one. And then after that, I want to build on those ideas I mentioned, Kuhn and Popper, but also I found a fascinating paper by a guy named Bernard Barber, and look at epistemology, an overly complicated term which says, how do we know what we know? And I've run into this in science, as I mentioned earlier in the interview, exactly the same authoritarian stance exists in science as in politics and government.
I'm just curious, given your insight into the authoritarian personality and narcissism and all these things, has that made it easier for you to operate as a tyrant in the operating room?
Well, I don't operate, of course. And the nurses, the clerks, I think they like me a great deal because I respect them. But I'm also aware that I look good by comparison because that is not the tradition of the doctor.
So informed by your research, you are in fact saying, I'm a kinder, gentler doctor because I understand about narcissism and all that.
Or the narcissists benefit me.
Okay. We've been talking today to Dr. Joe Abraham, author of Kings, Conquerors, Psychopaths, From Alexander to Hitler to the Corporation. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
This is Nick Spitzer. Join me here on KRVS every Friday afternoon following the Blues Box for American Roots. From the moody streets and muddy waters to the purple mountains and the open range, we bring you the roots of American music, including a few visits to Acadiana for a taste of some Cajun and Zydeco.
That's American Roots coming up Friday afternoon at 1 right here on KRVS.
This is KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake